you stop, and you didn't stop.
Well, you just told me you can never say it to anyone else.
Look, there are things going on here that you don't know about.
You think that I can explain this to the police?
What did she say to her? Why is she scared of you?
Henry, you may not be alone.
I'm gonna tell everyone what you are!
Tell me what it is another time! Go!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood, unfortunately for us, has fallen into the ocean, but Brian Pushbroom is here to take over.
Hi, everybody. I love sweeping up and eating dust. I'm Brian Pushbroom.
Great. That's great. Bryce, will you be able to fill in a little bit too?
Sure. Yeah, I can fill in for Brian. Hi, everybody.
Because I bristle a little bit at the idea of co-hosting with Brian.
I'm going to give you the stick and not the carrot on that one.
Hopefully, this has all swept our guest off his feet. Very happy to have DJ Wooldridge, host of the Only Stupid Answers podcast and writer of the Chaos Theory comic.
Yay, that's me.
You guys were very nice to have me over on Only Stupid Answers. It was a lot of fun, so I'm glad we could return the favor.
Oh, I really appreciate it, and it was a blast having you on. We talked about AI, which was probably the smartest episode we've ever done.
Not because I was on it. Like, y'all did your research. That was good stuff.
Was this AI the movie or AI the concept?
AI the concept.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think you could have had an equally long conversation with Tom about the movie.
I think the movie got a passing mention.
The movie definitely got a nod. Mm-hmm. We need to save it for the sequel.
Yeah.
AII.
Exactly. Well, we are going to talk about all things Cord Killy, starting with our primary target. U.S. District Court Judge Richard Leon ruled that AT&T's proposed purchase of Time Warner is legal. And it's done. The deal was officially closed on June 15th. So AT&T owns Time Warner. That means they own HBO, TNT, TBS, CNN, the Warner Brothers Film Studio that makes all the DC movies. The bulk of Time Warner's operations that we just described will be put in a new division of AT&T called Warner Media. That will stop confusing those of you who hear Time Warner Cable every time we're talking about Time Warner Media. It's just going to be called Warner Media. It'll be run by an AT&T exec named John Stankey, who told Bloomberg that they want to spend more money on programming. HBO has a $2.5 billion content budget compared with Netflix's $8 billion, and it sounds like he didn't put a number on it, but it sounds like he wants to increase that. Also, AT&T said they are going to launch a $15 skinny bundle sometime this week, probably. This was what Randall Stephenson mentioned in testimony about the merger. It will feature those Turner networks like TNT, TBS, CNN as an anchor. And the other big effect of this merger is that all bets are off as far as who can acquire whom, because the judge said this should go ahead and there shouldn't be any conditions. So Comcast has already officially thrown down their offer to buy the parts of 21st Century Fox TV and film that Disney was going to buy. That Disney deal is not for sure going to happen. Comcast made an all-cash offer. We won't go into all the details, but it's a higher offer than Disney's, and it's cash, not stock. Both offers exclude the Fox broadcasting, like the local television stations, Fox News, and Fox Sports. And whether Comcast or Disney gets them, those chunks get spun out. I think the Big Ten network stays with Fox, maybe too. Comcast was also waiting for the AT&T Time Warner deal to be resolved before they began this. So the question is, are we going to see more consolidation? Are we going to see AMC get gobbled up by somebody? Are we going to see CBS and Viacom merge, or are they going to in both be gobbled up by somebody else? There's a lot of rumors out there. DJ, how do you feel this affects you as somebody who consumes, you know, DC movies and watches TV shows on HBO?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it affects me. It doesn't feel good. But I can't exactly tell you why. Like, maybe just the idea of like two giant companies, it just feels
like
everything's
consolidating. Have you ever had AT&T as a wireless carrier or ISP? Maybe that's why.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It does feel like a free-for-all at this point about who's able to, like we saw with Comcast laying down the gauntlet for Fox and everything. It feels like it's kind of a free-for-all at this point. I don't know.
Well, especially that this deal is allowed to go through without restrictions, right? When you had Comcast buying Universal, a few years ago, there were tons of net neutrality rules about how they had to manage Hulu, how they had to make deals for licensing, I believe,
they had to become a silent partner in Hulu. They had to make sure, they had to guarantee that all of their channels would be available on an equal basis to others, that they wouldn't hold back NBC properties in order to get leverage over other cable systems that weren't run by Comcast.
And I know some of those, like I know the net neutrality ones specifically have expired, or they ran out their time on those, but this is no conditions. You are allowed to go and do whatever you would like. That's
fun.
It's worrying. It's equally as worrying as Comcast buying Universal, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's like we could, like I feel like I should be worried about it, but I don't know, like maybe this is something that will just won't really impact my personal life at all. You know what I mean? It's above my pay grade, as it were.
So one of the things that's happening is media companies have been dwarfed by tech companies. Disney actually has a lot of tech, including BAM Studios, LucasArts. So it is $155 billion company. That puts it along par with Netflix, which is a $158 billion company. Time Warner was only $75 billion. 21st Century Fox is only $74 billion. So we are going to see these other smaller companies merge with other companies because everybody's trying to become Netflix, Amazon, and in some cases Google and Facebook, because that's where all the money is. Those are the biggest companies in the world right now. So AT&T buying Time Warner isn't just, and probably is the least amount of it, is we want to control the content that goes out on our pipes. It's more about data mining. AT&T wants to become Google. They want to become Facebook. They want to become the people who make money off advertising. And the way you make money off advertising at that level these days is to have the data on people. The one super valuable thing that Time Warner has, that even smaller networks like Discovery, Scripps, or Viacom and CBS have, is data about their audience. And so expect AT&T to start buying advertising companies to take all that data that they're getting from Time Warner, add it to the data they have from their carrier subscriptions, from their DirecTV business, and start becoming an advertising company. That's what I think.
So if we're talking about like the big, larger companies, larger tech entities buying smaller content companies, or the Comcasts and the Universals going out and making acquisitions, who are the other big players that could be making moves like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Sony might spin out Sony Pictures. That's the one reverse situation. Sony's a big company. They make camera sensors. That's actually what they make most of their money on these days. They might spin Sony Pictures out to somebody else. Who might pick it up? I don't know. Verizon might want to pick it up. Verizon has Yahoo and AOL, but they don't really have a broadcast. However, Verizon just hired a new CEO who's very infrastructure focused. He's very much about 5G networks, which makes people think, well, maybe they're not going to go that direction. Charter could be possibly looking to merge to make themselves bigger and become a player in this. It's possible that you might see like CBS and Viacom merge into a bigger company that then starts acquiring other companies. It's hard to say. But there is going to be a lot more consolidation. That's pretty much the only thing I can say. And you're probably going to see more services come out of this. That's the other thing I'd like to get your guys' take on is AT&T is also talking about, like we mentioned, that $15 skinny bundle. We're probably going to see them putting money into HBO, coming up with new ways of offering content online rather than bolstering the old cable business. Everybody knows that's a dying business. It looks like they're going to start pouring money in this. We're going to have more choices for places to get this sort of content going forward. DJ, is that a good or a bad thing?
It's interesting because I know there was reports they were comparing the amount of money HBO spends on its program to the amount Netflix spends, and Netflix spends a significant, at least according to this report, spends a lot more money on its on the amount of program it's creating, which is crazy to me because, yeah, HBO's content is just looks way better. You know what I mean? Like it's mm-hmm. it's I would kind of rather more companies go the HBO route where you do less with more. Like spend more money on a few really quality shows than the Netflix model of like every week it's throwing out a new show because you just can't keep up with it all. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to do more what Netflix is doing where every weekend there's a new Game of Thrones show.
Well, and you would think that those two different approaches, whether it's buying a lot of maybe lower quality content, original content like Netflix is doing, but also buying a ton of it so that you're right, it comes out something new every week versus HBO, which is doing a few shows week after week, taking a very slow, deliberate pace to be a more premier sort of brand. You could still scale that though. You know, HBO is doing probably three or four shows at max at any given point in the year, but If HBO gets into a track where they have a show that doesn't need to come out every week, or they just decide, hey, there are infinite time slots on the internet, and so even if we do week over week, we can just have eight shows come out or eight episodes come out on any given day. Yeah. That should be able to scale if the budget goes up, mm-hmm. And while keeping those two approaches different.
Yeah.
I mean, the question then becomes, can you maintain the quality if you increase the scale, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Hopefully they can.
So you mentioned that part of this, Tom, is new services, right? That was part of the, was it Randall's testimony?
Yeah, that $15 skinny bundle that's probably going to be mostly Turner Networks and no sports.
And he was saying that they want to offer even more services by having this consolidation of companies. I don't know what that looks like, and you know there is infinite space for as many services as these companies can hoist up, but I don't know what's not being met. What needs of mine aren't being met yet, but right. Maybe it's I don't know it.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's not about you; it's about them, and that's always a recipe for disaster. But the same way that HBO is a service, right? Instead of a channel, it's now a service. You can buy HBO Now. They probably are toying with making a Turner service that says, hey, maybe what you want are just all the great TBS comedies and TNT originals in one service. And it's similar to what we saw with AMC kind of partnering up on Philo, where they're like, hey, let's just take, you know, Discovery and AMC and Scripps and put it together in a service. I imagine we're going to see more of these companies doing their own versions of that. None of them feel like they're going to take off because what people want to buy are services that are full of good things. And HBO is perceived as that. I don't know that a Turner service is going to hit the right demo.
Right.
I don't know if that's the right way of putting it.
It would seem to me like if I wanted those TV programs, I would either I'd have cable, or I would want a cable-like service, and Turner could offer me a Turner channel package, though that is very similar to what you can get with any number of these over-the-top services.
I think what Warner Media is thinking is, oh, we could do a Netflix, right?
Yeah.
We could take content from all the networks we own, maybe even HBO, and throw it into a Netflix-like product because we have all this content, we don't have to license it. And then we could even license some stuff, but we could put the Warner movies and all this stuff, and it would be a competitor to Hulu and Amazon and Netflix. The problem is none of us are going to see it that way. We're all going to see it as a weird way to access these channels that we're used to.
When do you think that kind of stuff is going to consolidate into, because you know, CBS has its app, DC's trying to create an app, we already have Netflix and Hulu, like and everybody's trying to be the next Netflix. And I don't know about you, I'm not going to.
You don't want to buy every channel individually.
Yeah. So what does that look like with situations like this as companies are merging? And when everybody's going to come out with their own app, most of them are going to fail. And then what?
Yeah, I think we're in the ascent of that part of the roller coaster right now, so it's going to get a little worse before it gets better, because Warner Media has to put out their version. And like you say, Warner's going to try a DC version as well. And we're going to see the fallout as some of these things are tried and fail. CISO is kind of the roadkill on this highway that we're driving down. Mm-hmm. But I bet NBC comes out with another service that's branded NBC. And we'll start to get a feel for what is it that people actually want. I don't think we even know until we see everybody throwing all their stuff out there in their various incarnations. I don't think we even know how we want it to work. So maybe 2 or 3 years of this experimental phase before we go, okay, what I really want is, you know, Netflix, Amazon, and X, Y, and Z. Right now it feels like Hulu is the solution to it, but there may be some new ways of doing it that we haven't seen yet. Who knows?
You know, the one. Oh, no, go ahead, DJ.
Oh, yeah, because maybe something would work is if you, instead of making something that's just like, oh, here's all the Time Warner stuff we own, it's kind of like how we do channels now, where it's like, here's the action streaming service and all the action movies you could ever want in your entire life are on this streaming service. That might be something I subscribe to, because when you say like, oh, here's a Warner streaming app, it's like, well, I don't even know what would be in that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not like Disney, where you immediately have brand recognition on, like, this is the type of stuff they make.
It does strike me that on the one hand, we're seeing consolidation of companies and wondering if that's a good thing. And on the other hand, complaining that there's too many of these services. So maybe we just need all the companies to consolidate into 3 or 4 and then each of them have one service and it's all good.
We have too many choices.
You know, I was going to say the exact same thing, which is like, part of what was appealing about Netflix was that it had a little bit of everything, and it wasn't trying to make deals. It's like, oh, it's got Fox stuff and NBC. I knew it had King of the Hill and Futurama and Parks and whatever. And Netflix is spending so much money on original content because it knows it's going to have to rely on it in the future. And in a world where all of the content owners are rolling their own services, we're definitely going to see winners and losers of just who's suddenly we have to decide whose catalog is very good in sort of an arbitrary way, right? And that, as a consumer, feels like the weirdest possible moment of like, I have to decide if I like the Warner catalog of content. I don't know what that could possibly mean. Do I like scripts? Like, yeah, I know the things I like, but
you didn't know what Netflix meant either. Used to it. I think we'll get used to it. Mm-hmm. As we talk, it sort of feels like we'll probably shake down into 3 or 4 broad Netflix, Amazon Prime Video like services. Yeah. And the companies that don't make a go of those will just end up producing content that end up on those for shows and movies. And then when I say 3 or 4, I mean 3 or 4 big ones. We'll probably still have Stars and HBO and like little ones as well. And then the gap will be, what about live? I think we'll still have Sling TV, PlayStation View type services for live news, live sports. But is there anything, is there a place for lean back live recorded programming, if you know what I mean? Like a stream where I'm like, I'm not choosing to watch a show right now. I'm just flipping on the channel. Does that go away? Or will there always be somebody who wants to just like turn on TNT and see what's on?
I mean, there are always I don't know. I'm just about to say there will always be people who want that, though. I don't know. It can't disappear.
I mean, it can. I don't know if I see that, theoretically it can. There's no reason. It couldn't.
Man. Well, we've got another story that's going to make this even more complicated. Let's take a moment to thank the folks who make this show possible. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Folks, you are the reason we exist and are able to talk about this stuff and keep you up to date and make you the smartest person in the room when you're talking about television and movie services. And we thank you for doing it. As a way of saying thanks, we not only keep doing the show, but we provide you access to our Spoiler in Time show a little earlier. Mm-hmm. And you get a bonus after talk show, which is just Bryce and me and Brian when he's here shooting the breeze about how we do the show and what other things we're thinking. So if you like the show and maybe even like those perks, head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. It's only $1. You probably dropped that getting into the bus today.
Yeah.
Dollar's so easy.
It's so easy. Also, don't look down when you're walking, because apparently you're dropping a lot of dollars every day.
Yeah. Be more careful and use that dollar for cord killers.
There you go.
There you go.
Let's talk about how to watch. So here's another contestant that we didn't mention, Apple. Apple announced Oprah Winfrey is going to create programs that, quote, embrace her incomparable ability to connect with audiences around the world. Apple didn't say whether Winfrey would appear in any of the shows, and no financial details were disclosed. But Apple said the deal wouldn't affect OWN, which is Winfrey's own television network that she launched in 2011 and has a contract with through 2025. She does appear on OWN, but not on most of the shows. She's only on her show. Apple has made deals that you've heard about on this show with Reese Witherspoon, Steven Spielberg, Octavia Spencer, Kevin Durant. The list is ridiculous now at this point.
Apple again? Tom.
And the running joke has been, hey, Brian, what do you think of this? And Brian being like, I don't know, until I see it, I don't believe they'll be good. But the list just keeps getting crazier and crazier. Now Oprah, which was probably a joke we made earlier, like, yeah, and then someday they'll sign Oprah. Well, now they've signed Oprah. What are they going to do with all this programming? They haven't said.
We don't even know what these programs are going to be in half the cases, right? Like, we know some of the properties they've bought access to or scripts that they've had made, but I know about half of these these are just development deals.
Oh yeah, no, with like Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, we know it's going to be a series about morning talk shows. Steven Spielberg, it's a science fiction show.
What is
it? is there any word when we're supposed to see Apple's whatever it is, this streaming service, this app, this whatever?
There's lots of guesses that it would be spring 2019, but no, that's not from Apple. That's just sources, you know, kind of triangulating things.
The earliest this stuff could be out, which it makes sense. It takes time to make any show takes a long time, especially if you're planning on, you know, doing a all at once release. But Tom, What are you feeling about Apple TV? What even does this look like? Because we've talked about Apple TV so much now, and we don't really have a good idea of what even the platform for Apple TV looks like. With the Apple Music, they've got the TV app, but those two things are not necessarily the same thing. What, paint me any picture of Apple TV, Tom.
So Apple is getting more into making money off services than it used to, but Apple's history is, we give you software in order to get you to buy our hardware. Yeah. I feel like that's the most likely thing is, hey, if you have an iPhone, an iPad, or an Apple TV, or a Mac, we will allow you to see all of these shows in a new Apple television section. They already have the TV app on iOS and Apple TV, so it'd probably be easy to just plug it right into there and like, and here's the Apple channel with all these hit shows from Steven Spielberg and Oprah Winfrey. And they are free to the people who buy their hardware. The other idea would be that they come up with some kind of Apple Music-like service, or maybe an add-on to the Apple Music service that includes television.
Apple Music
Premium.
They
have some licensing deals, maybe some movies coming and going, but also all these originals as sort of the backbone. I kind of think they do both. I think if you buy an Apple product, they say, great, you get the Apple television service, but they might also sell it to people who have Windows, Android, et cetera, for a price per month as a way to entice you to, like, maybe you want to buy an Apple product next time. Look at this cool stuff you could be getting for free.
That would require a lot of confidence in their content library, is to say.
It would require them to hire, like, Steven Spielberg and
Oprah.
But I'm saying, if Apple's pitch is going to be, you can access it for free on our devices or pay us to access it off of our devices, something that we really have, they kind of only do for Apple Music, that has to be, you have to be saying you really want to see what we've got. I don't think that's impossible. I don't. I don't know.
If anybody's arrogant enough to do it,
it would probably be Apple.
That's what I was going to say. It's if anybody's known, any company's known for their confidence in their stuff. But I think you're right, Tom. I think it's probably something like, if you have this Apple product, you get it. And then maybe they even sell the show. Like, you can buy this season of Steven Spielberg's show in the Apple Music store. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you buy seasons of your other shows and stuff like that.
Do you think that this is a precursor to Apple possibly buying a service that has a streaming library or a streaming infrastructure?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I think they would have done it by now rather than buying up all of these properties. And reading the tea leaves of all the other rumors, way back when Steve Jobs was still alive, Walter Isaacson wrote a book about him. And one of the things Jobs told him was, we cracked television, but we couldn't get the deals for the content. And everyone assumes that the TV app that's now part of Apple TV and iOS is sort of what was left of that project. That they wanted to license, like, with a cable company to make the Apple TV the interface to it. But the cable companies didn't want to give up the direct relationship with the viewers, and Apple always requires that they manage the relationship with the users. So it never happened. I think they probably went through the exercise of, well, should we buy Netflix? Should we try to buy Hulu? And decided not to, and decided to go this route instead, which is basically hiring the guys who developed television for Sony to come over to Apple and do it for them.
I need details. We have so much, like, I'm kind of astounded that they've let so many news stories go out about this and around this, and it's not taking shape yet. I just say, hey, we're doing a thing. We'll come back with you in 12 months. Or, man, I don't know.
Yeah, they don't do that, do they?
No, they don't really do that.
It's got to be a guy in the turtleneck doing a big announcement.
What would you like to see? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah.
I, you know, as always, like, good stuff. Like, good, you know, you'd want to see you know, I want Steven Spielberg's sci-fi show to be the best damn sci-fi show ever. You know what I mean? And then maybe I'll check it out. But I guess I'm one of the people you really have to try and convince, because I feel pretty content with, I'm not sitting here with my Netflix and my Hulu and my HBO going, gee whiz, you know what I'm missing? It's like, no, I feel like I got it pretty much covered. I wish the FX app worked better.
Yeah.
It's crowded.
No, there is no lack of good television these days.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a hard nut to crack. You know, what Apple's probably counting on is, we're going to throw all of these big names at the wall. People with our devices who are Apple fans will watch them all and start talking about them. And then hopefully we can just catch the momentum from there.
It's tough, man. Like, so much of it is word of mouth, right? You look at Stranger Things, which has no big names attached to it and is a huge hit for Netflix. And you look at Planet of the Apps, which has a lot of big names attached to it, and it's a pile of doo-doo.
Yeah, and Apple doesn't talk about Planet of the Apps at all. They are not pushing that. Carpool Karaoke, they still push. That is their only successful original. But Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke were toes in the water. That was like, let's take this bike out for a spin, and then we'll take it back in the shop and work on it.
But there's a big promotional play that you have to do, especially 9 months from now when any of this stuff might start to appear. You know, it has to come out, and it has to be good, and it has to get everyone saying that it's good, because there are already so many.
That is one thing that Apple fans are very good at doing, whether it's good or not sometimes.
Exactly. They'll show up and they'll let you know how good they think it is.
Yeah. All right. There are actual things that are actually coming to watch, and we're going to talk about them now in Under Surveillance. It's all about location. Under Surveillance. Did either of you all watch the UK show Skins ever?
No.
I never did, but I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, I have a friend that's really into it.
I'm exactly the same. I have a friend who's really into it, but I haven't actually watched it.
You've got to see Skins, yeah.
The folks who made Skins are creating a movie called Kiss Me First about a woman who discovers a virtual world and a murder. It's kind of Ready Player One meets murder. It arrives on Netflix June 29th. I guess there's already murder in Ready Player One, but yeah.
So Tom and DJ, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, and I would like to think part of me is a pattern seeking creature, and I want to fill in the gaps. And maybe this is all coincidence, but Kiss Me First is very much a Ready Player One adjacent concept.
And it's based on a book, I think. It was a book or a comic book?
Right. Yeah, it's based off like the sequel to Jumper, if I...
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Impulse, but it is based on a young adult novel by Lottie Mogak. But also, like, recently Netflix came out with like a teen movie called Alex Strangelove. Did you guys hear about that? It came out the past week or two. And you look at it and like, oh, that's very similar to the movie that came out in theaters, Love, Simon, which was also a high school romantic sort of dramedy about a queer boy trying to understand who he is. And we've seen, like, with shows like Queer Eye or with Nailed It of Netflix almost, I don't want to say knocking off, but trying to shoot very similar to other big things right now and other tent poles in TV and movies.
Yeah.
Am I alone in this? Is this because of Ready Player One, or is this just...
Oh, yes.
Okay. We should start looking forward to Netflix dropping Atlantic Rim or whatever.
Hey, man, that was a great direct-to-DVD movie.
What's the company that knocks those out? I can't remember the name right now, but it's one of those.
Oh, I know. There's a company that's famous with those.
Yeah,
Snakes on a Train.
And Netflix has those movies, right? Which is
it does. Yeah.
Yep.
Which makes sense. I guess there's probably people who watch them, and therefore Netflix is like, oh, if we cross section that, we can target, because Netflix isn't a channel; it's hundreds of channels, right?
Yeah.
It's trying to be whatever. It's really trying to be everything to all people.
Well, I think this kind of connects back to the original story with AT&T buying Time Warner and the kind of the concerns of that, because, you know, you look at the stories surrounding that and it's the idea of, like you were saying, like data mining and the algorithm and stuff like that. And it kind of takes some of the, I guess, fun or creativity out of, like, Netflix has an algorithm and it's like, oh, these guys are really into Ready Player One. Well, let's do that. Or whether that's the case with this particular instance or not. The concern I think would be is I just become part of a, cause also, like you said, you don't necessarily know what you want until you've seen it. Sometimes you stumble across something and I can't tell you how many times, like, I'll be going through Netflix and it's like Heat and it's like, 75% match. It's like, Netflix, you don't know me, cause I love that movie. Like,
yeah,
I mean, the algorithm is always bad until it works, right? And then suddenly you're watching Stranger Things, so who knows?
Yeah, man.
About a month ago, Variety reported 15 of Viceland's original series would come to Hulu, and those are now live on Hulu if you like the Viceland stuff.
Viceland is such a weird thing because Viceland has really great series. Flophouse is a great, like, home stand-up, in-home comedy sort of specials.
Yeah, yeah.
Gaycation is a fantastic look travel show. I'm glad it's on Hulu because a lot of that stuff I really liked watching on my trial of Viceland, I think. I'm glad that these are going out to more people.
So this is one of those situations where it, like, starts on Viceland and then eventually it trickles out to Hulu.
Yeah, I think so. I actually haven't looked at to see what their release, because Hulu does have, you know, sometimes restrictions on that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's at least a day, but I don't know exactly. I don't know that I've seen exactly what the delay will be. I think it's next day, though, just like some of them. Yeah.
Though, like, Viceland, I know when I was watching Viceland, they had, you know, the Apple TV app, and it wasn't, I don't get the channel, so I don't really know when the premieres were, but not every show would come out every week. It seemed like a weird schedule, so I hope some of that stuff got ironed out.
Yeah. Trailer's out for Tim Burton's live-action Dumbo remake, starring Colin Farrell as Dumbo. No, he's not. He's Dumbo's manager. And Danny DeVito is the ringleader of the circus. Movie comes out next March. Who's excited for Dumbo?
I remember watching this trailer and I saw Tim Burton's name and I got really sad for Tim Burton. That was the feeling I had watching this trailer.
The other thing is it's just a sad story. Dumbo is not an uplifting story. It's a sad thing. So, yeah.
Man, the trailer looks, the CG is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Jungle Book good.
Yeah. Jungle Book good is a very, that's my favorite shade of CG. But I don't know, man. I am probably more excited for like Christopher Robin than Dumbo.
Christopher Robin looks good. I'm kind of ambivalent to most of these live action adaptations of the animated. This one actually might impress me, because the less interested I am in the original movie, the more likely it is the adaptation. Like, I didn't much care at all for the Beauty and the Beast live action. Mm-hmm. But Jungle Book, I never really liked the cartoon. So the live action version, I found pretty entertaining.
Yeah. When you love the original, it's really hard for a remake to live up to it. That's just natural.
Right.
Yeah. Fox canceled the show Lucifer at the end of May, but Netflix has now picked it up for a fourth season. If you don't know, Lucifer stars Tom Ellis as the devil who leaves hell to live in LA and run a nightclub. But on the side, he's a consulting detective with the LAPD to help solve crimes. It sounds like something from a comedy show, like a bad pitch, but apparently it's very good and very popular, and it's based on a character from the Sandman comics. So it's got good source material.
Yeah. So, on my podcast, Only Stupid Answers, we do a bonus show called Super TV Showdown, and our co-host Roxy loves this show, loves it. I bailed the second I heard the premise. I was like, I'm not even going to give the show a shake because I think the premise is dumb. But
he's a hard-bitten leader of evil who just wants to run his nightclub. But when the LAPD comes calling, he can't help but help them.
But apparently it's amazing. I haven't had a chance to talk with her since this news broke, but I'm sure she's ecstatic that the show is coming back.
Well, good. I mean, and Beatmaster in our chat room points out, yes, good source material, although the television show has nothing in common with it. Yeah. So I don't mean to get Sandman fans' hopes up. But yeah, I know people who watch this too and rave about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. This was, someone had recommended this show for On the Lookout on this program. So hey, you know what? Go for it.
Well, now the joke's on them, because I was going to give the show a try once it was over, but now it's back on, so...
Yeah.
Well, supposedly there was a really bad cliffhanger on
at the end of season three,
so...
Listen, you're not going to beat the cliffhanger from Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Connor?
Yeah. So don't... I'm not going to shed any tears for those people. I've been there, all right?
We lived this already. Amazon Studios chief Jennifer Salk told Deadline things about the Amazon Lord of the Rings series. First time they've actually said anything official. First of all, it will not replicate the events of the movies. We probably could have guessed that, but yes, she confirmed. Going to start from scratch. But she also said they're right in the middle of conversations with Peter Jackson about his involvement. Salk also said they're considering shooting in New Zealand and that it will be one big series. There'd been some talk that maybe it'd be an anthology taking different aspects of the world, but it's going to be one big long series. And apparently we're going to find out more in about a month.
So this is not a lot of details.
So I misspoke to just now. I said they'll start from scratch. They said they won't start from scratch. It won't replicate the events of the movies. But they will fit into consistency with the movies. And I don't know if that means we're going to get actual actors from the movies or what, but yeah.
So this is less of like because sometimes when they do a remake or whatever, they're going back to the book source material. This is supposed to take place in the same continuity as the movies.
Yeah. And apparently what they've got the rights to is a lot of the appendix material.
Okay.
So like lore stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Older times, I think, is kind of...
That's my guess. My guess is it's going to be sometime before the events of Lord of the Rings. I don't know if it'll be before the events of The Hobbit. Maybe that too.
I have a pitch for you, Tom. Are you ready for this?
Okay, I'm ready.
The Forge of the Rings.
The what?
The Forge of the Rings.
Oh, I thought you said the Ford of the Rings, and you were pitching a branded content thing.
That, you know what? Put that on the whiteboard also.
Okay. Yeah.
The Forge of the Rings. The Ford of the Rings. The Fjord of the Rings.
Yeah.
But like, is that actually covered in any of the books? Like the actual creation?
Like the making of the Rings?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, yes, it's in the material that Amazon has the rights to. So.
Oh, hey.
There you go.
Exclusives. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Hopefully Amazon's listening. I don't know. I don't forget the impression reading these books and watching the movies that I was missing anything. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm dying to see what was going on 1,000 years before
I kind of am. I'm a lore nerd, though. I love that, like, reading. I read the Silmarillion and stuff, so I don't know how representative I am. I think, DJ, you're probably more representative of people.
The Silmarillion is cool. I remember reading a good chunk of it, and I was kind of bummed that they didn't use that stuff for The Hobbit when they decided to make that three movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know.
Are you excited for this, Tom? Like, are you really
this to be their Game of Thrones? The idea that they're trying to capture the same flavor as Lord of the Rings, and they don't mention The Hobbit, makes me happy. It's all about the execution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Certainly true, because, like, I remember I was just ambivalent for the Voltron series on Netflix. Like, I didn't care. I didn't not want it. I didn't want it. I didn't care. And it's actually really freaking great. So if you can take somebody that doesn't care and make them a believer, just as long as it's good.
How much weight would you put, Tom, into having Peter Jackson be a part of this thing? You really want Peter Jackson in it?
What I love is that Peter Jackson said, I'm not going to run this show because I don't know television, which is good self-awareness on Peter Jackson's part. I do love the idea that he might be involved in saying, oh, you know, the guy that makes really good Hobbit houses, or if you really want to show, you know, the elves, here are the stage, you know, production people, here are the craftsmen, here are the folks you need to get that look. I love that he would be involved in that aspect. To sort of be an advisor. I think that could help.
Okay.
Let's talk about what we're watching. I'll start because I don't have a lot. Deadwood, we will get back to next week on Spoiler and Time when Brian's back. The Expanse is just still lovely. I don't know if you guys are watching it or not, but it's fantastic and absolutely worth catching up with. And Westworld we'll talk about on Spoiler and Time as well. The other thing that I spent a lot of time watching because my wife started watching it and I had wanted to watch it, so I got in on it, was Terrace House on Netflix.
And you guys binged it fast. When we were there last week, you guys were maybe in the first quarter of that series. And now you guys have finished it? Is that right?
Yeah, we finished the first of Terrace House that came to Netflix, which was called Boys and Girls in the City.
Which is like 48 episodes or so.
Yeah, and we skipped Aloha State and went straight to the Opening New Doors series and have started that. But, I mean, it's just fascinating. It's actually gotten me to go back and start learning Japanese again.
Oh, wow.
You know, to kind of understand a little more about what's going on. Yeah. And it's just so different. Like, if you heard us talk about it before, I apologize. I'm repeating myself, but it's a reality show that sounds on paper like you're going to be bored, but give it a shot because it may, like it did me, just charm you with the fact that people are so polite. The controversies are not the controversies you get from US shows. And they do this thing where they essentially run a live podcast inside the show where they have these comedians come on and comment about what you just saw the way you and I would if we were watching it, which lends an even better element to it where the controversy can kind of happen outside of the reality. It's really interesting. DJ, have you heard of this?
No, not at all. But it's a Japanese reality show.
Yeah.
So it's three women, three men living in a house together, and they all have different jobs and different backgrounds.
Wow. I tend to avoid reality TV.
No, I know. That's what I said. Sounds on paper like you're going to hate it, but you might just love it.
I think there's something about it where because it is almost real time, it's usually like a week or two after real time. So they actually do stuff and then it comes out in Japan 2 or 3 weeks later. Like it being so immediate and being impossible to plan most of it means that it has to be a little slower and a little longer paced. But you get to pull out more of like the subtleties of the things that people say and the way that they act and the way that these relationships grow in real time compared to something like a Real Housewives, which compresses so much time and is based around these, oh, we got to get together for this and this and this.
Interesting. Where can people watch it?
It's Netflix.
One of the biggest controversies of the season that I just watched was that they cooked the meat that a client had given one of them as a gift without that person there.
We're going to talk about this on Spoiler in Time. The meat incident is one of the most heinous acts of rudeness in the history of Terrace House.
And the best part is the controversy isn't about them cooking the meat. The controversy is how the guy reacted when he found out they had cooked the meat without him.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
It's so great. It's
so great. What have you been watching, DJ?
Well, they just dropped the new season of Voltron. So I've been checking that out. I'm three episodes in, and it's a lot of the same group of people that were working on Avatar: Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. It's the same animation studio, so it's gorgeous. It's just a beautiful show, and it's just really smart and fun and light. I also because I was out of town over the weekend, I just watched the season finale of Legion, which I know has been kind of controversial.
I've only heard that the season finale is a big deal, but none of us have. We dropped.
I'm
Legion
way behind.
This season.
Yeah. Well, then I won't say what happens. Okay. I will say that you knowing that, like had I watched it when it aired, I might have had a different reaction. But since I had almost a week's worth of people saying it was the worst thing ever, once I saw it, I was like, well, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, really?
And right. It's not. Like quality, they make a character decision that is very divisive.
Okay.
And I understand the divisiveness, but I think it might work. Also, there's an opening fight, but because it's Legion, it's the craziest thing. It's amazing. Like, it's hard for me to knock an episode that opens with the sequence that it opens with.
Okay.
It's like this musical battle sequence, and it's amazing. It's one of the best things I've ever seen on TV. So that maybe clouds my judgment a little bit.
Kind of maybe a parallel with the season premiere, maybe.
Exactly. Well, because the season premiere had the dance battle.
Like a dance-off, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which now, if the Dark Phoenix movie doesn't have a psychic dance battle in it, I don't care. that's how I want all my psychic battles from now on. So there are some parallels to that, and that was interesting, kind of like a complete 180 from Voltron. Voltron's just nice and fun and light, and
yeah,
a bunch of kids fighting aliens and robots,
Yeah, Brian has been talking up Voltron nonstop, and from everything that I hear, it sounds like each season just keeps going at like a really strong pace at a really good quality level, you know.
Yeah, it's just, well, because they, fortunately, I think because it has that Netflix money, I know Legend of Korra had to switch animation studios about halfway through its run and then switch back. This is just consistently, like, even if the episode may not be the best, it's just beautiful. It's just gorgeous. And it's interesting because Netflix changed the way, it used to be like 13 episode seasons, and now because Netflix is trying to, I guess, put stuff out at a more regular rate, it's now chopped those seasons in half, so things move significantly quicker. But I'd watched Voltron as a kid, but I didn't have a great loving adoration for it. But I checked it out because Joaquin Dos Santos is a producer on it, and he's done basically a lot of my favorite animated shows. Studio Mir's on it. So I gave it a shot, and it's well worth it. It's very and it's done a really good job of unpacking certain elements of its mythology. Like, when it begins, it's a lot like the original show, where like the bad guys are, this race of people is just all bad, and these guys are the good guys, and it's complicated that situation as time has gone on in a really productive way.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Bryce, what about you? What have you been watching?
So I kept up with Westworld, and I went we decided that we would talk about Terrace House on Spoiler in Time last night. So I went through the season and kind of relived the highlights, and gosh, there are so many. We're going to have a good time. I also started the new second season of Queer Eye on Netflix, and that show is still very good. I just love everything about it. I mentioned that I watched Alex Strangelove on Netflix. I watched like an hour of it because I kind of couldn't. I kind of didn't.
Oh, really?
Very much. And then I also started the new first half of the last season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which, nice. I don't know. There's something about that show. You know, like, every season kind of is like this huge departure for the show, and it's still such a light and goofy show that I can't help but love it.
Excellent. All right, what should we be on the lookout for?
Well, we got a email from Jay. He sent along this pic, And he writes, since or if you liked a futile and stupid gesture on Netflix, you may want to check out Drunk Stoned Brilliant Dead, a documentary about National Lampoon. Much like The Man Who Would Be King is to the Polka King, this is the real-life documentary of National Lampoon. Okay. I wonder if Netflix will keep pairing biopics with their corresponding docs. I like it, Jay from Arizona. Very cool. I did not even know that this came out. But yeah, this is almost the same sort of situation with The Man Who Would Be King, Would Be Polka King, which was not a Netflix original, but Netflix licensed it right around the same time. So that's pretty cool. Check that out if you liked a futile and stupid gesture. It's Drunk Stoned Brilliant Dead.
Hey, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Real quickly, I know I've been flogging Trigor, the sequel to Pilot X.
You've been flogging
that got
it?
Funded on Inkshares.
Oh, yay!
Yay!
So thank you to everybody who pre-ordered. You can still pre-order it if you want. It'll be a while before it comes out, but it will come out because folks actually bought it. So thank you for that. I'm losing no time to move right into another book called Gallium, which is set in the Lot Beta universe. It's about a salvager in a mining colony who might be being persecuted by a secret society and gets fired from her job. So if you want to check that out, it's already available on Kindle in the Amazon store, and it's coming out in print slowly over the next week, and an audiobook is coming in fall, so I'll keep you guys updated on that.
Very cool.
Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
A couple months after Terry Gilliam's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, a French court ruled Terry Gilliam doesn't own the film.
No!
Paolo Bronco's Alfama Films won a court case that requires Gilliam to pay $10,000 in damages, and Bronco intends to sue the film's production crew and the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, man. What a... They're kicking
it
all down.
It almost feels like they're doing it like they made this up to fit the legend. It's too perfect.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. So are we ever going to see this movie?
No,
well, you guys, I'm not rolling out the con to see it.
I bet that there would be machinations to leak it. Though I also imagine that those people would be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. So, man,
it does feel like Terry Gilliam to be like, let's make a movie that no one can ever see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll get a 15-minute standing ovation for it.
Yeah.
We already know he got that.
It's a legend. It's already a legend. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Netflix will stream Telltale Games' interactive story Minecraft Story Mode. Netflix also says Telltale's will make a Stranger Things game. We joked about this last week, Tom. Do you remember that? We were talking about interactive media, and then like a few days after this story broke. This is...
Yeah. It's a weird thing because Telltale Games is going to make a game for Stranger Things. And Telltale Games, if you ever played The Walking Dead, are very story driven. But they're also going to take the Minecraft story mode game that they already made and turn it into a Netflix thing. But the Stranger Things game isn't planned to be turned into a Netflix thing. It's confusing.
But it makes sense. I don't know if you guys have ever played these games. I've played a lot of Telltale Games. I've especially played this Minecraft story mode. And I think they would work very well in this mode. There's not a lot of interactivity that you would need, you know, a lot of video components for. It would work really well. It would work really well just as a series, as like a web series, honestly. And so, you know, they've mentioned they're going to use pre-rendered video. I think it's really smart. And I think if you can find a way to make that work with the other really emotionally heavy stories like The Walking Dead or The Wolf Among Us or something, I think that's a win. I think that's an awesome choice for people.
Yeah, they should look at this for the Solid Snake games.
Oh, Metal Gear Solid. Okay.
Metal Gear Solid. Yeah, just put that on Netflix.
Well, I think there's a movie being tossed around for that.
Well, literally, you just cut out like 15 minutes of gameplay and you're good to go.
There you go. MoviePass announced last week it has passed 3 million paying subscribers. It believes it needs just 2 million more to break even, which it expects to get by the end of the year. We'll see. MoviePass claims to account for 5% of the U.S. box office this year, and parent company Helios and Matheson CEO Ted Farnsworth told CinemaBlend that MoviePass was planning to bring out a family plan and to bring a friend plan, although neither would have discounts. It would just be the ability to buy a ticket for your friends or family.
So I don't know if you guys also saw this over the weekend, but that movie Gotti came out, and supposedly it's not doing well. It's got like a 0% critics rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but then the users like it, and so blah, blah, blah. But MoviePass is saying that 40% of the ticket sales for Gotti were from people who subscribed to MoviePass, were from MoviePass subscribers, but also MoviePass is invested in the movie Gotti, and so it's promoting it. How do you guys feel about this, like, end-to-end movie distribution, right? MoviePass is paying for movies, they're promoting movies, and they're selling the tickets for them.
Interesting.
Is it
well, 40% of 10 is 4.
but is this a scary vertical integration sort of thing, or is this?
Well, okay, 25 reviews from Rotten Tomatoes, all rotten. It's not that many reviews even reviewing it.
Sure.
But if you knew this is a stinker, you sell it to MoviePass, right? Like, you let them invest in it. Because MoviePass is like, we don't care if it sucks. We can push it and market it and get people to try it, and then it's worth it to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably similar to the same stuff with we were talking about with, again, AT&T and Warner Brothers and everything. Eventually, you're going to get the people with the analytics selling you the stuff that they're making, you know.
That's MoviePass's whole hope, is that they'll be able to have the best analytics about moviegoers.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, this is me. Plex introduced a traditional grid guide for live TV channels. It's available on the web for Plex Pass subscribers and will come to other platforms eventually. They got me. Cool.
Yeah.
It seems like
exactly.
It seems like the grid is what everybody wants. All hail the grid, I say.
We all want some of that sweet, sweet grid action.
Someday someone will come up with something better than the grid, but it is not this day.
It's not today. No, we want grids.
Unsurprisingly, users of Fire TV devices who sideloaded apps to watch copyright infringing video have been infected with malware. I'm shocked.
No.
I'm shocked that people doing illegal things got bad malware. It's called the internet. Anyway, adb.miner. It's actually not that bad as malware goes. It just uses your unused cycles to mine cryptocurrency. You don't get any of the cryptocurrency, but it could be worse, I suppose. A factory reset should get rid of it, or you can use Total Commander, which is available in the Amazon App Store, and that'll let you find and uninstall the malware directly if you don't want to lose everything that's on your device, though we don't know if the malware has any hidden files that Total Commander wouldn't be able to get at. So the safest way would be to do the factory reset.
And this is such like a 1-2 punch, because you have these devices that are just meant for video streaming. And if you take away any processing power from, you know, decoding video, you're going to get an awful experience. Man.
Look, when you stray outside of the approved software, you take this risk.
Yeah. Right. Do you want to do some dispatches from the front, Tom?
I believe we should, yeah.
All right, here we go.
Oh, I'm sorry Brian's not here. We have a legal ethical question from Scott in Houston. He says, last week I went on a road trip, wanted to load up a bunch of movies on my laptop. There were a few movies I wanted and didn't want to have to pay $15 to $20 to purchase so I could watch them offline, but I didn't want to break the law and pirate them either. I stumbled upon a middle ground. I found several sites that offered digital codes, you know, the ones that they bundle into the DVDs when they sell them, from $5 to $10. I used PayPal, so I didn't give them my actual credit card info. Mm. And with Movies Anywhere, I was able to add movies to my library and download them on the Vudu To Go app. It worked great. My question is, where does this fall in the legal ethical dilemma? These are probably codes that came with physical media that are being resold. I'm sure this is against the terms of service, but is this the same as me giving or buying counterfeit goods? What are your thoughts?
I think of this like the video game market, where people are finding codes in various ways or buying codes in different regions where the games are cheaper when you take the currency exchange into effect. Mm-hmm. But if the danger there is if those keys are found to be, you know, sold out of region or illicitly gained, however, you could lose those games. You could risk your account, which presumably has other legitimate content tied to it. So I would be a little cautious of it. That's what I would say.
Well, don't forget that Redbox was sued by Disney for doing this exact thing. Redbox was taking the codes out to the DVDs that they bought to rent out on Redbox, and they were selling the codes. And a judge ruled that Disney couldn't get an injunction because the judge said, your terms of service are an overreach. You're using copyright law to try to stop the right of first sale. And that's not okay. It's still unclear. This case still has to proceed. It's unclear if this means those terms of service allow anyone to sell codes without having to sell the actual DVD.
Interesting.
But it's a gray area, Scott. So I think right now you could say, well, if Redbox is allowed to do it, so am I.
Yeah. And I think, so it's, you're probably good to go. But be cautious of where it's coming from. So you're not going to get hit.
Yeah. I mean, no one's going to get sued.
That's the biggest concern, is not so much using the code. It's giving your money to someone and then getting a bad code or, you know, stuff like that.
It's always interesting with this, you know, cause, this whole show is around this stuff when you're trying to, like, I'm not going to pay for cable, but trying to find legitimate ways. The big challenge for me was I needed to figure out FX. So finding out a legitimate way to get my FX content without having to, you know,
backdoor.
Exactly.
Because
we're content creators. We want to make sure that we want to support the people whose work we appreciate. So I don't want to steal something, you know what I mean? But I also don't want to get cable. Forget cable.
So what did you end up doing for FX?
If I'm being honest, my parents have cable. So I'm using the FX app through them.
Yeah.
So, and
you could,
it's like,
you could
know,
also, I think FX is one of the base packages for Sling TV, which then allows you to log into the FX app if your parents ever cancel their cable.
Exactly. Well, because again, that's something, you know, talking about apps that, you know, you don't know if you need. If they launched an HBO Now type service, I probably would invest in it as long as it's less buggy than their current app. I'm a big proponent of what CW did, where they just launch their app for free and you get ads on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and you're good to go, you know?
Yeah. We talked last week about MoviePass cards being rejected, and we got a few takes, including this one from Rodney, who writes, I just wanted to chime in with some non-specific notes as I've worked in the IT area of bank processing card transactions. Technically, a kiosk could be coded to reject MoviePass transactions by either looking at the description of the transaction or the routing number or processor. The kiosk should contain fields defined for the ISO 8583 standard. I have seen terminals at stores coded to avoid certain cards if they deem them as being high fraud potential. The data can tell you everything. Thankfully, I'm out of banking IT, and all I can say is, kids, if offered, don't do it. Hope that helps. Rodney.
Rodney, I think, nailed it. There was someone else who wrote in and said, maybe it's the first four numbers because those are unique to the bank. If there is the ability in your – we were racking our brains like, how could they deny MoviePass without violating their credit card agreement contracts? If – you can deny a particular processor based on the suspicion of fraud, then they could make an argument that they're like, some of these MoviePass cards are used to buy a certain movie and then they go see another movie. That's fraud. Mm-hmm. And that could be the loophole they're getting through. Thank you, Rodney. That's good.
Yeah, thank you.
Patrick from Chesterfield says, I believe we talked briefly last week about movies and shows based on books, and Patrick seems to have a definitive example. He writes, I'll leave to you guys to debate whether The Lord of the Rings or Game of the Thrones are better books or movies, but one that is not arguable is Wizard of Oz. He calls the book gruesome and bizarre, talks about the wizard filling the scarecrow's head with a mixture of sawdust and pins, and then says the movie, on the other hand, is brilliant and was nominated for 6 and won 2 Oscars.
Well, and the Wizard of Oz, is that a book series, or am I thinking of...
Yeah, it's L. Frank Baum wrote the books, and they were first turned into a play and then later the movie.
And I think there was a TV series for like a minute, right? NBC did?
Yeah, no, there have been a lot of other adaptations since then too, yeah.
I wonder if it's time to try again with Oz.
You know what? I'd actually be really interested in a more – because I think they did – they wanted to do a like an ABC wanted to do one. What's their series based off the Grimm characters?
Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. I want to say didn't they try an Oz adaptation that was connected to that somehow?
Oh yeah, they've got some of the characters from Oz in Once Upon a Time.
But I think you could do a really cool, like, especially once you get out of the original Wizard of Oz and like into stuff like Return to Oz and all that stuff. There's some really cool characters that I think you could make a really fun, weird series out of.
Yeah. And finally, George wrote to tell us about how cord cutting intersected an emergency weather event. He wrote, "Last night was the first big storm of the season. Severe thunderstorm, tornado, and flash flood warnings were issued all evening. I tuned into the local TV channels via antenna to keep track of the storm's progress. When I moved to the basement to check the storm shelter in case it was needed, I turned on one of the same local channels via my streaming TV provider on my tablet. The streaming version was a full 2 minutes behind the broadcast. Here in the Midwest, that is a serious issue during the storms. My old cable TV provider was a couple of seconds behind, but not minutes. Just as troubling were the emergency notifications coming via text that were 30 seconds or more behind the NOAA weather radio alerts. No reason for me to go back to cable since I have good OTA coverage, but it would be a consideration for some people. For just this reason alone, broadcast radio and TV is still vital in emergencies. In our rush to sell off all the spectrum to cell phone and other industries, let's not forget that in an emergency, it's the broadcast infrastructure that seems the most robust. Thanks. I enjoy the podcast. Thank you, George." What's your take on this, Tom?
Well, first of all, growing up in the Midwest, your NOAA weather radio is the only thing you rely on.
Yeah.
Right? Like even television was behind on weather alerts when I was growing up. Weather radio is what we turned on when the thunderstorms and the tornadoes came rolling in. And it is a great argument for why broadcast, especially radio broadcast, is still necessary. But your text messages should not be behind. We have a text message system for alerts in the Los Angeles area. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, DJ, if you ran into this, but when we had the flooding not too long ago and the fires, I was getting those alerts like right as stuff was happening about evacuation areas. In fact, I got one this weekend because there was a fire not in my region, but just letting me know.
Yep, same.
Well, no, I'm not from the Midwest, so I don't have a good gauge of this. He mentions that the text messages were about 30 seconds behind and that the TV stream was about 2 minutes behind. Is that the difference, you know, 30 seconds to 2 minutes? Is that vital?
I mean, 2 minutes is bad, especially with tornadoes. Tornadoes can move in pretty quick. Hmm. 30 seconds is not horrible. You're probably okay. But you would prefer it to be as soon as it's broadcast on television, it should be. In fact, the text message should happen before you hear it on television or radio, and it should happen at the same time as the NOAA weather radio. You don't want much of a delay there at all. I mean, I'm with George on that.
I see. Very cool.
All right. Well, that is it for this show. DJ, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course, folks, go check out Only Stupid Answers. It's a fun show, I can say from experience. But also tell them about Chaos Theory Comic, because dinosaurs, zombies together sounds amazing.
Yeah, so you can go to chaostheorycomic.com and support my comic, Chaos Theory, Zombies versus Dinosaurs, Volume 2. Volume 1 was a big hit. We successfully funded it last year. It sold out 3 print runs. And so I thought I had more stories to tell and I wanted to revisit it. And so it delivers exactly what the title promises. You've got zombies, you've got dinosaurs. In volume 2, you also have aliens, and you have a group of survivors that are desperately trying to stay alive. And it's basically every single crazy idea I ever wanted to see in a comic book put into this one. Every tier gets you a version of the comic. So $5, you get a digital version of the comic, and that's going to be over 60 pages. And $10, you get a physical copy signed by me, and it goes up from there. And for your listeners, if you want to go and contribute $10 or more, you can let me know in the comments that you're coming from Cord Killers, and I'll throw in an exclusive postcard map of the United States in this story, because in this story it's called The Undead States of America.
Nice.
And, and things have not been going so great since zombie showed up. So it has a ton of details that I couldn't fit into the comic, because once every page is just it's a ton of momentum, a ton of action, a ton of adventure, and it's just a blast. And people who have contributed and read it and whatever had a ton of fun with it. So chaostheorycomic.com to check that out.
Very cool.
if every single one of you even just does the $5 level, if not more, right now, he will fund.
Boom.
And then you get like the comic.
Yeah. So anytime you know you're getting your books funded and everything like that, it's what you need is the support of the people to get excited and get interested. It doesn't take a lot. You don't need to do a big donation. Tell your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, get out there and check it out, folks. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We shall cut your cords again next week.
Hey, guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh, my gosh. I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors. Look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
There's some classic names in there, but some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode and be one of these amazing people, like this one. Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.